So this past Friday evening, I had the honor and privilege of preaching at graduation, eighth grade graduation at St. James, my first year being through all of that, quite exciting. I chose the text for the day, for the evening, to be the road to Emmaus. Just, you know, the idea of life is a journey, we're on a road, and but if you remember the story, Jesus joins the disciples and they're talking. It's Easter evening, and they're still confused. Some people saw Jesus raised from the dead. They don't really know what's going on. And Jesus, the rabbi, looks at his disciples, the students, and says, in very encouraging and uplifting way, "You fools! You have slow hearts." In one couple translations, it's, "You're dull-minded. You're not getting it." So I took the opportunity to invite my colleagues, other teachers who had had the students in middle school just as long as Jesus had the disciples, right, for 3 years, that sometimes the question is not, what would Jesus do? Because we are not invited to look at our students and say, "You fools, you're dull-witted." Sometimes we have to let Jesus be Jesus. It's not ours to question, nor is it always ours to do as Jesus does. I bring that up because in our story today, Jesus finds himself again with some opposition. What has happened immediately before our story is the healing at the pool with a man that had been on the side. He had a bad leg, he paralyzed, he had not been able to get up for over 38 years. He'd been laying by the side of the pool hoping to be healed. And so Jesus heals this man, and he does so on the Sabbath. So already there's some friction between Jesus and the religious leaders. You're not allowed to work on the Sabbath. And Jesus wants to argue that it's not work to give life. And if it is work, well, guess what? That's what God ultimately wants. The Sabbath was meant to give life. And if telling someone to raise up after 38 years of disability and to throw aside the mat and walk, if that's work, well, that's not why the Sabbath exists. It exists because God gives life. And then things are kicked up a notch. The question is, well, who are you to say what the Sabbath is for? And that's where we join the text today. Jesus says, well, it's pretty much up to me and my Father to decide what the Sabbath is for. We are one. The real question is, who is Jesus? What kind of work is he doing? And this healing story is a pathway into exploring more of who Jesus is. Jesus says, in rather some of John's very convoluted language, I actually originally had another 5 verses, but Heidi, they just say the same thing you just read, but just different word order. John likes to do that in the longer discourses of Jesus. But Jesus says his work is the Father's work. He says the Son can do nothing on his own, but only what he sees the Father doing. Right, this is not a weakness. This is not Jesus taking a subservient role. It's a communion. It is a relationship that the Son has with the Father. Jesus isn't freelancing here. He's not off doing his own thing. He's acting apart from God, but he is at the same time revealing exactly who this God is. He says, what the Father does, the Son does. The Father gives life. Guess what? The Son gives life. The Father raises the dead. Guess what? The Son also raises the dead. Jesus isn't something other than God. Jesus is God and is showing God. The Father and the Son share a life-giving communion, a relationship. Right? And that reminds us, in the language that John so often uses, that's what it is all about for us. The Father and the Son sharing this communion. We are invited into that, called to be part of that communion. At its heart, our faith isn't about a set of rules, an ethical program, a dictated pattern of how we're to behave, our piety. These things matter. But at the center is the communion of God and Jesus, and then us. The nature of faith, as John has been spelling out for us, is to accept the communion of Christ with the Father, and then us with those both. I had joked last week I didn't want to pray on the Trinity. This is pretty close. Or preach on the Trinity, right? Because last week was supposed to be Trinity Sunday. And then I fall into this. Again, pretty close. How can the Father and the Son be one God, yet two distinct people, persons? Yeah, that's the mystery, but how it functions for our lives, for our faith. The Father and the Son are one, and we are invited to. Jesus urges us to be aware of the things that we cannot do for ourselves. Right? And that's why I opened with, sometimes we got to let Jesus be Jesus. Jesus can call his disciples fools and dull wits. It's not our place. But on a deeper level, Jesus can decide what is fitting on the Sabbath. Jesus alone dies for our sin. Jesus alone frees us from the bounds of sin and death. As much as we try to do what Jesus does and to feel called into faithful activity, we cannot do the things that our Savior does. It's a temptation, I think, we feel. To just look at Jesus as the model, as an exemplar of the faith, and to forget that it all falls, all hinges on what Jesus came to do as a Savior. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That DIY attitude sometimes leaks over into our faith. And Jesus is asking us to remember, to recall the stories of his ministry, of his discourses that sometimes seem to ramble. But it is all what God has done for us to give new life. So therefore, the Son is worthy of honor and praise, as is the Father. Right? Jesus says the Father has given judgment to the Son, so that all may honor the Son, just as they honor the Father. Important for us, because if Jesus was only a model, right, we'd admire him. If Jesus is only an example of the perfect Christian life, we might imitate him. But the Son gives life as the Father gives life. The Father and the Son are one. And therefore, he is worthy of worship. The text doesn't end with try harder. Be more like Jesus. The text ends